I like champagne with steak. I like champagne with nothing. I like bubbles, period. So that's a great way to start.
Hello! Welcome to The Corner Table, a Capital Times podcast about food and drink in Madison. My friend Bob Haymauer has been writing wine lists for about 10 years now, balancing Chardonnay and Sauvignon Blanc with Cabernet and lots of Malbec. This week, with Valentine's Day approaching, Bob and I are going to talk about what makes a good wine list and how to find the most interesting wines wherever you happen to be. I am your host, Cap Times food writer Lindsay Christians. A lot of us are going to be going out this coming week, so I'm really glad that Bob stopped by with some pro tips. If your go-to is ordering the second cheapest bottle on the list, this is the episode for you. Give a listen. Hello, Bob. Welcome.
Hey, Lindsay. How's it going?
Going great.
Awesome.
So I wanted, first of all, for you to just give everybody a little history of how you got started writing wine lists.
Sure. Well, I started writing wine lists in my late 20s when I realized I didn't want to be a closing bartender much longer. I had like this kind of interest in wine, but as a bartender, there's only so far you can go, right? So I was like, oh, this wine thing is kind of interesting. So I really kind of, I was a bartender at Samba when it first opened, and I really kind of threw myself into it. I had a really great mentor there. The first wine director, his name's Pat Ducey. He's out at Steve's University now. And he really kind of took me along and encouraged me in a way that is still kind of humbling. And very quickly, he kind of moved over to the retail world, and I took over writing the list there just about a decade ago. That was my first list at Samba.
And this is at Samba. So were you doing like a lot of – because that's a Brazilian style
churrascaria,
steakhouse. So were you doing a lot of South American wines? Were you doing big reds?
It was a fun list because I didn't – I mean, it was a big, big wine program there. I mean, it was a big restaurant. The opening was really big. We were doing 200 covers on Sundays. It was a really fun kind of roller coaster to open that restaurant. And the list was huge. I mean, we had hundreds of bottles of wine. It was a U.S., Spanish, and South American focused, which I thought was really, I mean, and I didn't come up with that focus, but I really respected that. I thought it was nice that it had like, you know, it had a point of view. It didn't try to have something from every region across the globe. It had an internal logic, which really appealed to me. And that really kind of sunk in with me. I think that's one of the things that I kind of took away from that. But yeah, the list was, we had a ton of cool Rioja. The one thing that I did when I took over the list is I made an entire page of Malbec. We had like a crazy amount of Malbec. I still know a lot about Malbec because of that. And that was like just as Malbec was kind of taking off and becoming hot, you know, in 2007, 2008. And it was really exciting because we were getting all these really great deals. And there was a lot of this high-end stuff that was kind of cool. And I was able to put together like 35, I think, different Malbecs by the bottle. And, you know, my job there, I was lucky enough to really work the floor a lot as a sommelier. So, and not every restaurant in town has that position where you actually just go and kind of talk to people. And that was really fun, especially like the Malbec thing, really exposing people to the different expressions of that grape. Because it can be, I mean, we all know it as kind of this really robust wine, but it can be really finessed and beautiful too. And it's that was a lot of fun.
Did you take any of that with you to Tornado Steakhouse?
Oh, yeah, for sure. So, my next big job, and I had that one for years, was at the Tornado Steakhouse. And I still write the wine list for Tornado Steakhouse. In fact, I just came to hear from there writing, updating the wine list. And I took a lot of that. I mean, it was fun. You know, it was fun not having those restrictions anymore. So I could start buying French wine. And I could start buying Italian wine. And this is a point in my career, too, when I was really becoming excited about those, you know, regions, especially, France and Italy. And I haven't given up that excitement. So like really getting to explore it. But, you know, the thing about Tornado's list is like it's an old restaurant. There's not like a ton of infrastructure to support a giant wine list there. there. We don't have a big cellar. We don't, you know, so we don't have a ton of room behind the bar. We don't, you know, we're really busy. You know, like it's a busy restaurant. So like you don't have, you know, Samba, we had like this modern facility and this really nice two different wine caves and Tornado. It's like you have to kind of make do. And I had one page to really kind of make a statement. And that to this day is still a ton of fun. In addition to that, I started, you know, I also do the list for Underground Food Collective. So I did, you know, Underground Kitchen's wine list for the few months that it was open back in 2010 and 11. I do the list for Four Quarter, you know, special events, you know, butcher shop. And of course, you know, for the shop too, for Cork and Bottle, I pick out the wines there.
Those are the lists at Tornado and Four Quarter are super different.
Yep.
So talk about that. Talk about how you sort of choose wines. Would there ever be crossover? Would there ever be a wine that you would say, I'm going to put on both?
Oh, for sure. I mean, I really believe strongly that that a wine list really has to have a personality. I think it should make a statement, and I think it should be complementary to what the restaurant is trying to achieve. You know, Tornado it's a steakhouse, and that is it's what it is. That is its core identity. And what I wanted to do with the Tornado list was really explore what people think about steakhouse wine lists. And steakhouse wine lists, if you know, I feel like you can go to a steakhouse anywhere across the country and see some of the same bottles. You know, there's these big national brands that are really well established, very high priced. You know, it doesn't matter whether you're in San Francisco or Dallas or, you know, Cleveland or wherever, you're going to see some of the same stuff. And one of the things I vowed for Tornado is I really didn't want to see those brands on the list. Tornado is it's owned by a family. I wanted to have the wine list, have those types of wines, those, you know, some of those big ripe California cabs and stuff. But I wanted to be a little bit more selective about which ones I chose because I wanted to reflect this kind of idiosyncratic, the smallness of Tornado. And then as far as Four Quarter goes, that's all old world stuff. So that's all European. And there's definitely some crossover. So, you know, there's some really great steak wines, you know, some Barolos I've actually had on both lists at the same time just because I really like them or I got along with the winemaker at a visit or whatever that I really kind of want to support some folks. So, yeah, there's definitely crossover. But I think it's important that each list reflect, you know, the restaurant in which you're reading it.
I got to write the by the glass lists every once in a great while when I was working at Barrique's.
Ooh, fun.
Back in the day. You have to fill certain slots on your list, right? Mm-hmm. I need to have a couple at this price by the glass, yep, and a couple at that price by the glass. And I want to have a mix of things. So if somebody comes in and says, oh, I like something, you know, a little bit sweeter, I know that I'm going to have, you know, something on the list like a Riesling or something that they might like, a little bit lighter bodied. Or, you know, you always have to have something like a cab or a cab adjacent, you know, just for people. But then I want to have some quirky stuff, but I have to still hit those price points.
Yeah, that's it. That is how to write a wine list.
It was
right
really,
there.
It was really fun for me because one of the things I thought I could do was I could be like, well, I can put this on, and I'm working enough that I can totally sell it. Like, mm-hmm, I can just tell people, and I would sell out of things that I loved all the time.
That's isn't that
right?
A great feeling?
And it's awesome.
Like getting people excited about something that you're excited about is one of the great joys of being in the wine business.
There are a couple of lists in town that I think about when I think of like a wine list having an identity, mm-hmm, or like really going along with the restaurant's focus. So, for example, at Everly, they have an all California list. I think it's all natural as well, like natural wine. Also, the list at Osteria Papavero is all Italian.
Jenny Griep, the GM there, does a great job with that list. I was just there last week. She does an amazing job with that list.
It's a fantastic list.
Yeah.
And it's so focused. And mm-hmm, it's always, you know, it's always changing because obviously wine is an agricultural product and it changes all the time. That was a spiel I had to give at Barrique's when I was working there. I have to be like, oh, we're out of that. But you know what? If you could just, you know, there are these other few wines that I think you might really like if you liked that one.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's very like the Pandora style of if you liked this song,
exactly,
you're going to like this song. I wonder about like that idea of identity behind a wine mm-hmm. list. If you might want to just talk a little bit about that, how you establish that for a particular place. You talked about Tornado a little bit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it can happen in a lot of different ways, right? So it can happen, okay, with Tornado, I want it to feel like a steakhouse wine list, but I want it to be brands that people haven't heard of before. You know, so it's like, oh, I see the California cab, but I might need to ask about the producer. And to me, like that's cool because that gives the server a chance to say, you know, we try to support smaller family-owned wineries. You know, with Four Quarter, it's vegetable-focused, right? It's vegetable-forward. I wanted to have more elegant, a little bit more finessed wines. I think one way to do that is to say, okay, we are just focusing on European wine. And that way we can do a deep dive into obscure European regions and not get, you know, and then not be like, okay, well, then I can grab this from this place and this from that place. And this, and then all of a sudden you, like, you read the list and it's like, oh, this is kind of it's kind of muddy. It doesn't really, it doesn't have a focus. And I think that's one thing I really took away from that Samba experience. It's really like, okay, no, we don't have everything. We can't have everything. But what we have is this, and it goes with the food, and it fits with, you know, when you're reading the food menu, reading the wine list, you know, they kind of go together, and this is why. And, like, really putting those words actually into the servers, you know, giving those words to the server so they can explain it. And once they do, if the guest asks about it, I feel like people are really receptive to that. They're like, oh, that's kind of cool. Someone's actually thinking about this in the same way that they might think about the food menu, you know, not just like throwing a bunch of stuff on there.
I'm often in the position when I'm out to dinner with friends and it's always, you know, oh, let's get a bottle of wine for everybody. You know, Lindsay, can you pick it? And so then I'm sort of looking at, like, we haven't chosen our food yet, usually. I have to sort of find something that's going to be in the right price point, that's going to go with lots of different food that I mm-hmm. don't know what it is yet.
Yep.
And I will often migrate toward, if at all possible, I love bubbles. I love bubbles with everything.
For sure.
Especially if there are some affordably priced bubbles. Mm-hmm. Because if you're going by the bottle, that's an opportunity to get bubbles.
It's true. It is totally true.
Like, I will often go for, like, light-bodied red or, like, you know, acid-driven white.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder, like, do you have techniques for, A, when you're ordering for a group, or B, when you're ordering you don't know what your food is yet?
Well, I'm all, like, we are put in the same position often. And I use a lot of the same tricks you do. I think bubbles are a great way to start. You know, if you sit down with a group of six or seven people, getting something, I usually look for like a Cremant or a sparkling wine from a region that isn't necessarily, this is kind of my general advice to people is like, look for regions that aren't necessarily famous for whatever you're ordering. Cause, if someone went to the trouble of putting it on the list, who, you know, so if someone tasted it and put it on the list, even though it's not like a sparkling wine from
Limbu.
Yeah, exactly. Or from Tuscany or whatever. Like someone tasted that and thought, oh, that's cool. And I'm going to take a chance on that. So and a lot of times you can really find value there too. So like starting with bubbles, always a great idea. Bright, mouth cleansing, you know, goes with, I like champagne with steak. I like champagne with nothing. I like bubbles, period. So that's a great way to start. And I think, you know, lighter bodied reds, totally a great way. You know, if people are really kind of tripping on needing to have a red wine, looking for Longarosos, you know, these like red wines, these kind of table red wines from Piedmont, looking for lighter bodied grapes like Pinot Noir and Gamay grown in regions that aren't necessarily known for growing them. I'm thinking actually of a bottle of wine that I had at Papavero last week, this Bucaton Gamay. It's, you know, it's Alpine. It's Italian Alpine Gamay. It's amazing. It's so good. You know, my partner and I, we sat down and didn't really know what we were going to have. And we had a glass of rosé to start, and it was a long day, so we ordered a bottle of that after the rosé because we still didn't know what we wanted to eat. And it went well with, you know, it went well with the risotto. It went well with her fish. It went well with, you know, my salad. It was great. So, yeah, I think that's a really good way to go. Light-bodied reds, high bright acid whites, and look for grapes that aren't necessarily grown. Look for wines that using grapes from regions where they're not normally grown or not most famously grown.
So it's like Cabernet from places that aren't Napa.
Yeah.
I will also, like, I really like New Zealand Pinot Noir.
Yeah.
Pinot Noir is often, you know, obviously Burgundy. I love, when in doubt, though, I feel like Oregon Pinot almost never lets me down, even if it's not, like, great, mind-blowing. I have been happy with Pinot Noir from Oregon, or even like Pinot Noir from like Sonoma Coast.
Sure.
That tastes like strawberries.
Yep.
And also strawberries.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, you know, when you're looking at Pinot Noir on the list, if you see something from like Umpqua Valley, which is, you know, in the far south part of Oregon, like you can usually knock a few bucks off and get that second bottle, and it's going to hit all those same notes. But yeah, you know, sometimes it's just nice to have something simple.
Yeah.
You know, especially if you've got a big group and everyone's having something different and you know you're just going to be talking to each other anyway. Not every wine moment needs to be contemplative. You know, sometimes it's just glue.
Right, exactly. I love to get cava for that reason. Mm-hmm. If I see like a decent cava. I love also like seeing things like Vino Verde and Grüner Veltliner on a list.
For sure.
They are never going to be like super complex, but both of them go great with veggies.
Yep.
And they're going to be lower in alcohol usually.
Yep.
So I can have more of
them. Yeah, for sure. I mean, and you know, when you're eating a bunch, not getting super weighed down by high alcohol wines is great too. You know, Vino Verde, Grüner Veltliner, especially those kind of like you can definitely spend some money on Grüner Veltliner, and I have, but like those entry levels are usually pretty solid, and they are all kind of like, it's very rare that I have like a Vino Verde or a Grüner Veltliner in that kind of, you know, $14 retail range, which would put it, you know, $30 on a list-ish, that kind of like are great outliers in terms of taste. They're all pretty solid. They all kind of taste, you know, in this range that are good and really versatile.
Do's and don'ts when ordering from a wine
sure.
list. One of my don'ts is I don't like to take my phone out and look up the wine and try to figure out what's the best value.
Yeah.
I find it distracting for a couple of reasons. One, I've pulled my phone out and I want to be focused on the person that I'm with.
Mm-hmm.
But also, you're going to see what the price was retail, and you don't want to see that when you're out. You just don't. You don't want to know that it's like $14 in the store, but it's $30 here, right?
Yeah.
Because, of course, there's a markup. You're paying for all the people. You're paying for the glassware. You're paying for the lovely seat where
yep.
you are. But do you have any, like, do's for, like, do's and don'ts?
Oh, yeah, for sure. There's a couple things. Like, one, never be afraid to ask for, like, a taste of something if they're pouring it by the glass. So, like, if you want to get a bottle of wine and they pour it by the glass, don't try to get 8 tastes. You know, focus, figure out what you might be interested in and ask.
That takes me back to my days as an ice cream shop scooper. When people would come in and want to try like 5 of the ice creams and I'd be like, come on.
Well, and it's not even, well, it's just like, you know, you can focus your choices. It's okay.
Chunky monkey is fine.
That's a good kind of motto. Chunky monkey is fine. So don't be afraid to ask for a taste if they pour it by the glass. Like, you'll know that generally that bottle hasn't been sitting around a super long time. You'll get a little preview. So that's like a tip. Don't be timid about it. I've never been to a restaurant where they're going to be like, say no. You know, they might say no after the 8th taste, but 1 or 2 is usually pretty okay. The other thing to really do is kind of look on the list for kind of nerdy stuff. Like I've been saying throughout this whole thing, I really like obscure wine regions, grapes you haven't heard of ever, for a couple different reasons. One, there isn't a huge market for those things. So like when you see like a Mondu from Bougie, right? That's far eastern part of France, and cool climate, this peppery light grape. You see that on a list and you're like, oh, I've never heard of this.
Mon Dieu sounds like some kind of exclamation.
Yeah.
Like, Mon Dieu!
Sacre bleu! But, you know, you see that on a list and you're like, oh, someone tasted that. No one had to buy that wine. There's no, like, it's not a California Cab. It's not like an Oaky Chardonnay. There's some things that people really like to feel like they have to have on their list. This is something that someone tasted and was really into. So a lot of times I'll take a chance on that, even if I can't get a taste of it. those kind of things, it's like, oh, there's someone in this restaurant world that has tasted this wine and put it on the list for a reason. This is not checking off a box. It's not a category that you have to do. It's something that someone really cared about at one point. And those are the wines that I'm kind of drawn to, just kind of sight unseen.
I was at an Italian restaurant recently, kind of Italian-American, and I saw a Greek red on the list.
Nice.
And I thought, I don't know why that's there, but I want to get it just because it's there. And my husband said no, because he doesn't care for Greek wine, and we ended up with a Barbera. But still.
But no, that's exact. I mean, I bet you someone tasted that wine and was super into it. And again, it's not the Sangiovese at the Italian place. It's something that, like, oh, someone's like, I'm going to take a chance on this. And I also like to reward people for taking chances on wine lists like that. I think it's, you know, I think there's got to be someone out there who's going to buy it. And I guess that's me and probably you and hopefully the people listening to this. Ultimately, we all vote with our dollars. So, like, I really try to encourage exploration and risk taking as much as I can with my meager dollars.
I like that. So that seems like a good note to sort of end on. Encourage exploration and risk taking.
I love it. I love it.
Take risks and explore.
You heard it here first, people.
All right. Thank you for coming in.
Thanks, Lindsay. Bye.
This has been The Corner Table, a podcast about food and drink in Madison, produced by the Capital Times. Our music was composed by Patrick Christians. Get more food and drink news online at captimes.com. And if you like, subscribe to The Corner Table wherever you get your podcasts. You can follow us on Facebook at Corner Table Podcast. I am your host, Cap Times food writer Lindsay Christians. My wish for you this week is one of those Reese's Peanut Butter Cup hearts, because they're so much better than the regular kind, and we have to seize the moment. Stay warm, Madison. Cheers.